All right, so let's talk a little bit about this stuff that you went through this stuff with antidepressants and anti-anxiety drugs. What was this like for you as a teenager?
Yeah, that's correct. So I was put on a cocktail of antidepressants and anti-anxiety drugs when I was 15. My father had suddenly passed away, and as part of the kind of response to that, I was taken to a child psychiatrist and put on these to, help manage the grief is kind of how it was put. And so for me, I think the really important thing to note is that I was 15 years old and I was a good kid. I didn't, I didn't want to disappoint the people around me. I trusted doctors. I trusted, the adults in my life. So I, to me, it was like taking an Advil because I had a headache, and that's kind of how it was presented to me. So it didn't occur to me that this was kind of a life-changing decision and one that I would really come to question when I was first put on them. They also didn't really help me or hurt me when I first started taking them. The first couple of ones I tried, I did not have a good reaction to, but it was really obvious. Like within, a few hours of taking a dose, I was falling asleep at school or so sick I had to take myself home. Like the side effects were very obvious and immediate. But when we found the combination I ended up on for the next 15 years, there was not any immediate side effects. So that was kind of the good enough thumbs up to keep going. And then it wasn't until I turned 30 and kind of had this realization that I had been on the same cocktail of powerful psychiatric drugs for my entire life, my entire adult life anyway, that I started to realize something's not right here because I was still depressed and I was having suicidal thoughts. And it's a very simple thought, but it took me 15 years to understand, and that was if the antidepressants were working, I wouldn't, be thinking about taking my own life. And so that was the moment where I said something needs to change.
In retrospect, and if I get too personal, I'm sorry.
No, go as deep as you want.
First read this, I'm like, uh-oh, wait, this story's got to get out. In retrospect, when you look back at this, do you think as a person that you could have handled without the drugs the situation of losing your parent?
In retrospect, I think absolutely I could have handled it. I was a pretty good kid. I got good grades. I was ambitious. I had curiosity. I think that what I needed was time, and I think that I needed a better understanding of, that I was no longer living in a world that was normal. So to expect me to act normal, especially after a certain period of time, was a really unreasonable expectation. And I was also a very stoic kid and still am. I'm able to, shut up and stuff the pain, physical or mental, to get through a performance. And at that point, it kind of felt like my life was a performance. So I think that, it was a little interesting because I think the people around me wanted more emotion. They wanted me to be really crying and upset. And instead, I was just going through the motions and still kind of doing okay. But, there were some subtle signs, but I think what was really happening is that I was in shock. And I think what I wish had been more understood at the time, this was also 2001, so it was a very different world as far as talking about, emotions and inner thoughts. I think I wish that there just hadn't been such a rush to get back to normal and that, maybe taking a year off of school, if that's what I needed, or planning to take a year off of graduation instead of going right to college, none of that was really necessary. But we were still in this mindset, okay, of, well, yes, this tragedy happened, but the SATs are coming up, and then prom, and then the AP tests, and then applications to college. So it was just that there was no, it was inconvenient to change the path or take a step back and give me time. And I think that this sounds maybe a little critical of my mother, and that's certainly not the intention. This was a joint decision. I also felt those pressures and thought that that's what needed to happen because that had been the story I'd been told. And now I realize that that's not what had to happen. I think I would have been okay if I had really been allowed to process it and take things slow and just kind of done it on my own time.
do you think the emotion of what you were going through, losing a parent like that, and then also the pressures, as we know, are always intense on young high school girls, all those things together may have accentuated a situation where I just kind of want to be normal. And so you went along with this whole thing?
Probably. You know, I mean, at that point, these drugs, you know, antidepressants and anti-anxiety drugs had only been approved for minors for a short period of time. And it was really kind of the heyday of these drugs, right? They were on the cover of Time magazine. This was supposed to be the solution to all. So not only was I motivated to kind of, you know, be normal and was a little uncomfortable with the spotlight of being, you know, the girl whose dad died over the summer, but there was also no research or any indication that there would be any negative consequences about these drugs or that they would be difficult to stop down the line. So it was a little bit of a perfect storm in that sense. Like, this was just supposed to be something that would help, that was not going to have any bearing on my life other than a positive one. So why not take it? And if it helps you get back to normal, you know, that's the bonus. So, you know, it's very easy in retrospect to want to look back and say, you know, this is the person to blame. This was where the choice was wrong. But at the time when no one knew any better, and I certainly wasn't trying to push back, because at that point I had had a really, you know, strong view in my mind that when you're sick, you go to a doctor, and I had been kind of, the actions around me were suggesting that I was somehow sick. And so what choice did I have? Why would I question that? Now I know that's not true, but that's how it felt at the time.
And as you look at this, I mean, the recovery process, the withdrawal, everything, mm-hmm. that had to be absolutely painful at times because of the confusion that your mind is going through, that your body is going through, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Well, withdrawal was something that I had never been told about in the 15 years that I was just kind of mindlessly prescribed these drugs. No one ever suggested that it would be difficult to get off of them. And so then when it started to be excruciating to get off of them, and I sort of felt like, you know, I also got really angry, because for me what arrived very quickly in withdrawal was this understanding of how much I had lost over the past 15 years, because suddenly I was experiencing things and feeling things that I had not felt, and I was seeing little glimpses of who I actually was, not who the drugs had kind of made me think I was. And I got really mad because I had felt like my entire 20s and half of my teenage years were just robbed from me. And that I still feel. I still get pretty emotional about that. If there's any kind of lingering, you know, wound here, it's just that huge feeling of loss for that time. And I, you know, I did have to work through that and sometimes still face that. I feel like, you know, I'm 36 now. I've been off these drugs for 6 years. I've pretty much lived the last 6 years like I was 23. Like, I traveled around the world, you know. Half the time I didn't know where I was going to live because I was like, yeah, I'm going to go here and I'm going to go there. And I've been, you know, scrambling side jobs to pay for my life. It very much is something that people in their early 20s would do, but I kind of felt like I needed to get an end, and so I was going to do it then. And it's only now, you know, that the book is out and, you know, I'm entering into the second half of my 30s that I'm looking at my future and saying, okay, well, what do you want to do? And I think that everyone, you know, has moments in their lives where they ask that question. I feel like I'm really asking it a little bit later, because I didn't spend my 20s asking it, because I didn't want a future at that point. I wanted to die, so I wasn't thinking or planning. That's the biggest thing I feel robbed of.
So in the book, you detail the fact that you felt like you were fundamentally broken for a decade and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Do you still feel that way, or do you feel like there are gaps that need to be filled in that you just can't remember how to, or what goes there?
So I don't feel fundamentally broken anymore in any way. And more than that, I know that I was never broken at all. I was going through, you know, a very human experience that we all go through at some point, losing someone very close to you, a relative or parent. And I did it at a young age, and that there's no real playbook for that. And the fact that we have a real tendency in this world to want to put things into easy boxes with steps you reach and tick off, and grief is one of the things that just doesn't work like that. I know now that I was never actually broken. I think that I got more broken as the years went on because, you know, these drugs are really powerful. They do change the way your brain works. And I think that what started off as maybe a rusty wheel broke down over time. And then I had to fix something that was really broken when I got off the drugs. But it wasn't fundamental. This is something that I came to understand I could, you know, come back from. I could rebuild. That takes a huge amount of fortitude and strength, and I'm really lucky that I feel like I have the inner resilience to do that. But I know that I was, you know, I did not have faulty wiring, and I don't, and I never did, and it's just that the wrong messages had been sent for so long, and you have to rewrite that story. But as far as feeling like if there are gaps I have to fill, I do kind of feel often that I was sort of stunted, that by being put on these drugs at such a young age, it kind of halted the emotional development, and it certainly stopped me from getting resilience and learning resilience. And so I feel like now, again, as in my 30s, there's a lot of lessons I've been learning where I really do feel like I don't have the tools to work with the problem or to fix the problem, and it seems so obvious to other people. And these are mostly interpersonal things, so it's a little hard to give a concrete example, but it's almost just like I didn't learn certain aspects of how to interact in the world because I was so shut down and disconnected from myself. And I run into these weird little scenarios, usually with other people, where I'm kind of like, oh, that should be different. I should have learned that. I should know how to do this, and I don't. So that's certainly been frustrating, and I've been lucky that I've had people around me who, you know, haven't shamed me for it and instead teach me. But I just feel like that it was a very formative time in my life, and it was altered in a way it shouldn't have been.
The book is called May Cause Side Effects. Was this a means of closure for you, or are there still things that you're dealing with now today that, and you don't have to get specific, but are there things today that you still deal with?
You know, I didn't write the book. Some people say that, you know, writing a memoir is part of the therapy and part of the healing process. I don't really feel like that was the case for me. Instead, it was much more of a service in the sense that when I was going through this, there was no literature from the patient perspective on this topic, and there was almost no research either. And so all we had was a few message boards buried in the internet, and what you saw on there was horrific. So I realized that there was a real gap in our understanding of this, and also in focusing on the fact that antidepressant withdrawal can end. There is hope. There is recovery here, and we need a lot more stories of that, and also recovering from depression as well. So I effectively wrote the book I wish I'd had during my year of withdrawal, and I hope I accomplished what I set out to do, and so that's why I wrote it. I think that naturally, just through time, I also kind of healed up pretty well and did a lot of counseling to do that. But now I feel like a completely different person. There's very few times in my life where I walk around and feel like I'm triggered or, you know, have some sort of lingering issue that's a withdrawal side effect. I feel really very healed at this point. I'm grateful for that.
So, and I assume that your mother also helped in many respects in writing this book as well, too.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, my mother is the hero of the story. I think that I wouldn't be here without her, because if I was struggling at any point during those 15 years, and especially during withdrawal, if I called, she picked up the phone, and she was the only person who really fundamentally never thought I was broken. So she has been a huge help. We have constant conversations about it, and, you know, she helped me with everything from making sure that the narrative was accurate, that the way I remembered things was the way she remembered things. She was also my copy editor now and again. She's an English teacher, so every once in a while I'd just send her a manuscript and say, I'm too exhausted to look to see if the periods are in the right place. Like, take a look at it. And she would just go through it with a red pen. And, you know, it's just been, it's this is a book that I wrote, and in theory it's about me, but she's the real hero of the story, and it would never, ever, ever have happened without her.
A real English teacher with a red pen. That's always the best, yes.
Oh, yeah. It's so funny. The first time she read it, I was so nervous because she knew most of the story, but there were some details she didn't know, and I was a little afraid it would really upset her. And so then she asked, well, should I look for copy edits as well? And I said, sure. And so I go to meet her for coffee. This is the first time she's read the book, and I think to myself, oh, my God, she's going to be crying. She's upset. I don't know. She just comes with a big stack of paper and slams it down. She goes, all right, page one. So first error, and like, she just blew past the emotional part of it and just got right to the English teacher, and it cracked me up.
I love it. I love it. Well, that's the right way to go about it, for crying out loud.
Yeah, no kidding.
Now, the experience you've had, obviously your mother's been involved in this too. In really, honestly, kind of the last question here, what would you now say to those parents that are out there? Explore options, do some, what would you ask them, or what would you tell them?
Oh, God. I mean, I talk to parents about this quite a lot, and I think the biggest thing is, and when I talk to my mom about this, I've asked her before, like, why did you sign off on this? Why was this the choice? And she said two things. She said, one, I think I was operating from a place of fear because I had just lost one third of my family, and I was too worried I was going to lose the second third as well. And so that's the first thing, is I think parents really need to understand that probably most of their decisions are operating from a place of fear, especially in this day and age when, you know, the suicide statistics are really scary and kids are really screwed up, and there's a thousand reasons for that. But I think that instead of trying to figure out what's wrong with the child, the question needs to be what happened to the child, because there's a reason. There's always a reason why, if your kid is somehow down a path where you think it's necessary to intervene with pharmaceuticals for a child, something has happened to that child or to that family that needs to be addressed. So in addition to asking what happened to the child and searching out alternative methods that don't alter their development and their chemistry, which is very precarious at that age, the parent needs to get help for themselves. Because if you've got a 9-year-old who you're considering putting on antidepressants, that is not the 9-year-old's fault. That is, and this is hard to say, that is something wrong in the household, which means the parents are involved. And it is really, really difficult to talk about that without, you know, family blaming, because that's not the intention. It's just the reality of the situation where kids are at the whims of the environment they're in. And so parents really need to, you know, turn the microscope back on themselves, address their role in the issue, and then change course. And I think that if child and adolescent psychiatry and psychology had better support for parents, we shouldn't be going down this path of all these young people being medicated and then having horrific consequences. And I just think that the blame game there, and also really wanting, it's just really difficult for people to take that responsibility, but it is the only way through. And so that's my advice, is like, at first, this has got to be the absolute last resort. I think ample research needs to be done on the part of the parents. And I think you got to get a second opinion. And honestly, I think you got to take what a lot of these psychiatrists and more likely general practitioners say about these drugs with a grain of salt. And that's not to, you know, insult doctors. That's not it. It's actually to say that these poor doctors are so overworked. They are dealing with so much, you know, so much red tape outside of seeing patients, that at this point in the way medicine is being practiced, it's completely unrealistic to expect every single doctor to have an expert knowledge in every single medication and, you know, the latest research on that medication. They don't have time. No one person can do that. So what needs to happen is the parents need to come to the table, not in an insulting way and say, I went on Google and this is what's wrong with me, but say, this is what I found. What do you think? How can we make a plan that's going to be best for the kid? not what's best for the parent or the teacher, but what's best for the child. And there needs to be a lot more collaboration there. And then the last thing is that if we get to a point where all of their options have been exhausted and people involved believe that the best choice is to medicate a child, the stuff needs to be short-term. There are no long-term studies, not a single long-term study on any antidepressant on the market. These are only studied for weeks to a few months at most, and there's no real studies about pulling people off of them either. I mean, we know withdrawal is a thing, but we haven't actually, like, studied the reasons why people go into withdrawal and what that looks like. So we need to know that this is going to be a short-term thing, and that needs to be part of the conversation when the process begins. There needs to be a plan to get off of it, and it needs to include safe deprescribing, not just pulling kids off and switching them around on different medications, because that's how withdrawal happens. And when withdrawal happens, it also often looks like another psychiatric illness. And so then that's how we get into polypharmacy. Kids start getting additional diagnoses piled on top of whatever they already had, when often it's just that when you pull these drugs away, the brain and body goes a little haywire, and so it manifests like another illness. So they need to be aware of that. And I would recommend that people look up something called hyperbolic tapering. It's a way of slowly pulling people off these drugs as opposed to too quickly and cold turkey. And so that's a lot, right? And most people don't know that, and that's why this is a really tricky situation. So there just needs to be a lot more research done by the parents. Parents need to really look at their own role here, and you need to make the best decision for the child and the child's long-term future, not what's most convenient for the parents or the teachers.
Interesting subject, no question about it. I mean, there's so much that's involved in it. You obviously detail this in the book, May Cause Side Effects. Where can people get it?
It's available wherever books are sold. You can get it on, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your local independent bookstore. You can also get it in Canada through in Australia through Booktopia. Canada, it's on Amazon and Indigo, and it's available through retailers in the United Kingdom as well.
Awesome. Brookstein, thank you so much for your time and your story. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
You bet.